here with this week's hottest stories in the investment world. This is Zach's Friday Finish Line.
Hello, and welcome to the Zach's Friday Finish Line. I am Brian McQueenie, an associate stock strategist here at Zach's, along with one of our editors, Maddie Johnson.
Hello, today is Friday, August 10th, and as always, we are here to recap this week's biggest stories from the investment and financial world. Earnings season is finally winding down, though we have a ton of retailers yet to report. But trade tensions between the U.S. and China are ratcheting up, and plenty of Wall Street's favorite companies are making headlines. We'll have a packed episode today as we attempt to juggle it all like a court jester.
Yes. First up, we're going to check in with two of America's not universally liked media companies who broke up this week before the relationship could even really get started.
Yeah, it was like a Tinder match, but one of them ghosted.
Yeah, definitely.
So the latest news in the Tribune and Sinclair merger came on Wednesday when the Tribune board voted to terminate the agreement. So this comes nearly a month after FCC Chairman Ajit Pai announced that he had, quote unquote, serious concerns about the proposed deal.
FCC Chairman and guy who drinks out of giant Reese's.
Giant Reese's mug. Coffee mugs. Yeah. Notably, that's like his like hitch. Like that's like his thing.
Yeah.
And he smiles while doing it. Like he's like, oh, I'm so cool.
Yeah.
I'm so young and hip. Anyways. He's not. Tribune is now suing Sinclair, seeking $1 billion in, quote, lost premium to Tribune stakeholders and additional damages, unquote. Tribune alleges that Sinclair did not do enough to see the deal gain regulatory approval. So to have a shot at approval, Sinclair would have had needed to reduce its overall market exposure. The $3.9 billion deal, which was announced over a year ago, actually, would have been the combined company, would have seen the combined company reach 72% of U.S. households. Sinclair's proposed divestitures would have reduced that reach to 62%, but regulators had issues with the details of the proposal. So the Wall Street Journal reported detailed accusations that Sinclair breached the merger agreement by engaging in unnecessarily aggressive and protracted negotiations with regulators. In other words, Tribune believes that Sinclair's attempt to find a loophole created unnecessary risk and ultimately affected the potential success of the merger.
See, I love that because they're simultaneously accusing them of not doing enough by not divesting enough to reduce the reach to get approval. And then they're accusing them of doing too much by like trying to have these extra negotiations with regulators to just kind of find a loophole.
It really is like a relationship.
You're doing too little. You're doing too much. It's not me. It's you. Definitely. So we'll see how what comes out of that. But yeah, as I said, I don't think, well, I know for sure living in Chicago, the Tribune doesn't have the greatest reputation these days. And obviously Sinclair has been all over the news the past few months, getting
it's a conservative powerhouse.
Yeah, definitely. So they don't have many friends right now, and you know they couldn't make it work together either. So moving on here, we have, speaking of two companies that don't get along very well, we have the latest.
They're frenemies.
Yes, definitely. The latest in ongoing war between Amazon and Walmart. We always check in with the Amazon-Walmart war. Feels like every couple of months there's some sort of new like joust between the two companies. So we had one of these this week with Amazon announcing that Prime members can now order from Whole Foods and pick the groceries up from a store within an hour, all without getting out of their car. This is like a lazy man's dream. I love this idea.
I will say I am excited to try this. However, I don't have a car, so I'd have to walk to a Whole Foods.
And stand in the designated. Well, hold on. Let me get to the full details of it, and then we can picture.
Or just get an Uber, and then Uber back to my apartment.
So you use the Amazon Prime application, Prime Now application. You order your groceries or whatever on the app. You go to a designated parking spot at the store, and then someone comes to you while you're waiting in the car and gives you your items. So I guess if you don't have a car, that probably works a little bit differently than that. I would imagine you can just walk into the building and get them that way.
Yeah.
But I do think it would be funny if he just walked up and just
stood in one of the parking spots and was like, hi.
Or if you said, call the Uber. And it's like, I'm actually right there. And then we'll just be here for a second. And then if you could just bring me back to where I came from, that would be great. So this service is rolling out in Sacramento and Virginia Beach. But just like the Whole Foods delivery service that has been slowly rolling out to new markets this year, that's the plan with the in-car pickup service. It's going to be rolling out to more cities later this year. Very similar to services that Walmart has. Walmart has been greatly expanding its digital ordering, in-store pickup services. So this was, you know, clearly a thinly veiled, like, haha, take that at Walmart. And the Walmart did the same thing this week by adjusting some of its return shipping policies for its online marketplace. So starting this fall, customers are going to be able to print shipping labels right from walmart.com, even if they are buying goods from third parties, which I don't even know if a ton of people know that, but walmart.com does have third-party sellers on it, similar to Amazon.
Okay.
It's going to indicate, the website's going to more clearly indicate the individual return policies. And then it's going to, overall, Walmart is enabling third-party sellers to utilize the company's returns shipping service, which offers discounted shipping rates. And this is all, I wanted to cite this, all according to a memo that was obtained by CNBC. So technically not public information yet, but Walmart sent this memo out to its third-party seller network. CNBC acquired it. So this is very similar to an amendment that Walmart made to its return policy about a year ago for third-party sellers, which essentially made it much easier for customers to return items via third-party sellers. But a lot of the cost burden in Amazon's case was put on the merchants themselves. They didn't love that so much. Mm-hmm. This seems to be a little bit more fair to the merchants. It seems like you're giving a little bit more merchant option here. So Amazon taking one of Walmart's ideas, Walmart taking one of Amazon's ideas. We'll see if there were any improvements made to either of those ideas.
But I wonder how the Amazon or the Whole Foods delivery service is actually working out. Because now that I think about it, one of the best things about Whole Foods is actually going to Whole Foods and shopping at a Whole Foods. Because
yeah. Well, I guess I think you would get another opinion on that too, because I feel like people would be like, you know, I get in the grocery store and I start picking out everything I don't like or don't need.
But at Whole Foods, it's a different experience, though.
Yeah, this is a good sample, great samples.
Because if you go to the Big Flag, great, like huge Whole Foods in metropolitan areas, like here we have two in Chicago, they have like mini shops in a Whole Foods. Yeah. They have a bar. Yeah, they have a coffee shop.
You can get a drink and walk around and shop while you're
Have like restaurants in the Whole Foods. So it's more like an experience like while grocery shopping. It's different than shopping in a Walmart.
Certainly. A night and day, you would call it.
Exactly. So I feel like it's almost like people plan out going to like a Whole Foods on a Saturday.
Well, yeah. Yeah. Specifically, the demographic of people that Whole Foods is attempting to target are the type of people that would plan out a Whole Foods trip, definitely.
Yeah.
Whereas like, I personally am trying to get in and out of a Walmart as quickly as I possibly
can. Absolutely.
But there are merits to shopping there. So I do like their like order online, pick up in store type of stuff.
Right.
So yeah, you're probably right on that. But their target demographic, they're also, especially in these major metropolitan areas, we're busy. We're all over the place. Sometimes we just need some things and pulling up to the parking spot and having friendly Whole Foods person. They're always the nicest people in the entire world at the Whole Foods. Bring it out to me, smiling face. I could see it working. I don't know. I've personally never ordered anything from Whole Foods delivery. I don't even know if we have it in Chicago yet.
I don't know if we have it in Chicago yet, but I feel like with like these like specialty grocery stores, maybe not the best thing for your wallet, but you end up getting, you find more things than you anticipated buying.
Well,
so you're like, oh, this organic strawberry jam from the middle of California. This sounds great. That's $7. Okay.
So where the rainwater comes down the perfect way. So as
you're like, this truffle honey. Yes, absolutely need it
made with
now.
The last two of these types of truffles ever.
Need it right now.
Yeah.
So that's like, it's just, yes.
But that's part of the appeal though, too, is people, I feel like some people know that they do that and they're like, maybe I should just order what I need and pick it up so I right. can avoid yes. spending too much money. So.
This is definitely how I am at Trader Joe's, yeah. which is, they have crazy things, like crazy things. But then it's so much cheaper than hopefully. Anyways, moving on. Now I need to go grocery shopping.
Yeah. Mental note, grocery
Mental
shop.
Mental note, grocery shop this weekend.
We got Disney earnings this Disney. Week. So let's move on to that.
Disney. They reported third quarter fiscal 2018 adjusted earnings of $1.87. They missed our consensus estimate by a dime.
A whole dime.
But earnings increased over 18% from the year ago quarter. Revenues increased 7% as well from last year to $15.23 billion. However, the figure lagged our consensus mark of $15.49 billion. And this marked a rare double miss for Disney. Media Networks revenues climbed 4.9% year over year to $6.16 billion. And revenues from cable networks inched up 2.5% to $4.19 billion. However, Media Networks operating income declined 1.1% year over year to $1.82 billion, and cable networks' operating income decreased 5.4%. Looking at cable networks' operating income a little bit more closely, this was hurt by BAMTech and this like overall loss and decline at Freeform, and this is like known as ABC Family.
Yeah, formerly ABC Family.
Formerly ABC Family.
And BAMTech is the video streaming company that they bought that they're building all the video streaming stuff on.
Yeah. So this Freeform decline was partially offset an increase at ESPN, and ESPN's results benefited from strong affiliate revenues, partially offset by higher programming costs and a decline in advertising revenues. Notably, ESPN saw a contractual rate increase for NBA programming.
Yes, and one less NBA Finals game this year because the Warriors swept the Cavs this year instead of five games.
Salty reminder of that inevitable result.
Yeah.
Studio entertainment revenues increased 20.3% to $2.88 billion, while segment operating income increased almost 11% to $708 million. Robust performance from Avengers Infinity War and Incredibles 2 drove performance in this segment. I have not seen Incredibles 2 yet. I'll probably wait for that to come out.
Well, you're one of the DVD. Only ones as
apparently,
you, as we see
but
from these box office numbers.
I did see Avengers Infinity War with my dad. He ended up seeing it twice because he was like, I came home and I was like, I haven't seen Avengers yet. He was like, I'll go with you. And I'm like, haven't you seen it? He was like, yeah, but I'll see it again. And I was like, okay, Dad, let's do it.
It seems like a lot of people saw it again because
apparently,
this did insane numbers.
Yeah, it's unreal. Anyways, it was fine. But Disney stated that Avengers Infinity War has grossed over $2 billion globally. Insane. Making it Marvel's highest grossing film of all time. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, Incredibles 2 is the top domestic grossing animated film ever and has generated over $1 billion in global box office to date.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so two killer movies for Disney in the quarter. Mixed bag of results all around, though.
Yeah.
Some good, some bad.
Kill it at the box office.
Yeah.
They have a good slate, more or less, coming out later this year. Christopher Robin is in theaters. I don't know actually how that is performing now. So
I haven't heard anything about performance there yet. No,
I think it just came out, so the numbers might not be like.
I'll see it.
Worth.
Looks good.
It looks good.
My movie pass kind of sad. I actually let my movie pass renew, and now I'm on the limited 3 or 4 movies a month plan or whatever.
I'm really excited for Mary Poppins in December. with Emily Blunt. Why did you laugh? It's gonna be a great movie.
No, it'll be great
with Emily Blunt. Ant-Man and the Wasp, I guess, was supposed to be
good.
So
they should keep the studio entertainment thing rolling for the rest of the year.
I feel there's got to be more movies by Disney. Oh, Frozen 2.
There you go. Wow, they'll really keep this studio entertainment ball rolling for the rest
of
2018. Yeah. Incredibles 2 probably won't last long as number one animated movie of all time. So
no, Frozen 2. Anyways.
So we'll keep an eye on studio entertainment revenues. We're going to move on now to a story that I'm very excited to talk about. Elon Musk.
Ugh.
Came a little bit unhinged on Twitter this
Literally,
week.
Literally hashtag ugh. My ultimate reaction whenever I hear his name.
He's been,
or his see his face.
He's been getting after it on the tweets over the past few weeks, and he continued that trend this week. On Tuesday, he just tweeted out at like 11:30 in the morning that he was considering taking Tesla private. As I said, he sent it in the late morning hours Tuesday and said that there was a take private price of $4.20 per share for Tesla, and then said that funding was secured. Didn't hashtag it, but the hashtag is now hashtag funding secured anytime you need. This immediately became a meme. I got a like from Chipotle when I tweeted out, thinking of adding guac for $1.59 extra, hashtag funding secured. So, yeah, now it's a meme already. But so the stock started to surge. There was like a brief like 1 to 2 hour period where he just didn't follow up anything. And everyone was like, what the hell was that? And as that was happening, we learned more details about how the sovereign Saudi wealth fund had built the 3-5% stake in the company.
So he tweeted. So he tweeted this, considering taking the company private, after
like 10, a report 15 minutes after,
came out after we learned that.
Yeah.
This interesting.
So there was a good 15 minute period of time in my life where I convinced myself that the Saudi sovereign wealth fund was buying Tesla and taking it private, which I actually don't think is ridiculous once we go through all these details. Like, it kind of seems like maybe he's had discussions with the Saudi Arabians, but we'll get to that in a second. So the Saudis have a 3-5% stake in the company. We know, and Tesla's going private at $4 or $420 per share. Everyone's like, what the hell is going on? Could we get a follow-up tweet? Did someone hack him? Was he making a weed joke? Like, what's going on? And then he follows everything. He finally gets back on Twitter. He starts replying to people, following up on it, giving more details.
Mm-hmm.
This stock is surging as this is happening. But on the back of the report about the Saudis, and as all these tweets are coming in. And then someone with a brain comes in and they say, okay, we should halt trading for a little bit because this is ridiculous. And like, what the hell's going on? And can you even do this on Twitter? Like, are you allowed to be sharing these details as the CEO of a publicly traded company? A lot of questions still on whether that's legally a real thing or not. But so it was briefly halted.
It's legally ambiguous.
Yes. Oh, the most ambiguous legal thing that I've ever experienced. he puts out a hastily typed up blog on the Tesla website.
Was it in his Notes app?
He didn't do a Notes app confession, but he did.
I love those I see them on Instagram.
He did whip up a quick blog on the Tesla website and clarified that the plan is a real thing.
He also said Tesla was the most shorted stock of all time. Is that true?
I think it is, yeah.
Okay.
Just in terms of like total number of shares shorted. Seems like something that might fluctuate quickly though. So anyway, he lashed out at the short sellers, as he loves to do, as you said. He also, I love this line.
Sorry,
so I wanted to share this.
Like, that most shorted stock of all time reminds me of Kanye's rant at the VMAs. Beyonce had the greatest video of all time.
I'm just going to say something. Musk and Kanye over the last couple months have been behaving very similar.
Well, and Donald Trump, so.
His use of Twitter this week, certainly very similar to how the president uses Twitter. I love this line from the blog post, though. Quote, as a public company, we are subject to wild swings in our stock price that can be a major distraction for everyone working at Tesla, all of whom are shareholders, end quote. As you rightfully pointed out this week, Maddie, the major distraction going on right now is the fact that you just decided to go on Twitter and tell the world randomly that you're taking the company private, $420 per share. Also, your like ramblings on Twitter over the past few weeks, calling that cave diving hero guy a pedophile, just going on about random stuff. Those are distractions.
This is
too.
Why hashtag ugh,
so
whenever I hear his name is so appropriate.
So he's saying the wild swings in the stock price are a major distraction, while he's causing one of the wild swings in the stock price and creating a major distraction.
The irony.
Gonna put it aside for a second and just continue on with the, because I think that there's some merit to the way that he was structuring, talking about the plan, and so I don't think it's an all bad thing, certainly. I just think that it's almost comical. It's almost a parody of itself, how it was all unfolding this week. So essentially what would have to happen to make this a reality is that Tesla would have to buy back all of its public shares at $420 per share. That would be about $70 billion, not including debt. We're looking at more like $80 billion, including debt. You would think, okay, the current largest shareholders are probably a part of this conversation then, right? Musk is the company's largest shareholder. He has about a 20% stake. The next three largest shareholders are investment firms T. Rowe Price, Fidelity, and Baillie Gifford. All of these companies declined to comment on the record about the proposal when reached out to by CNN Money on a Wednesday. They might not have known, certainly. One of Musk's tweets indicated that Tesla shareholders would have the choice between selling their positions or holding on to partial ownership of the private company, which, again, seems legally ambiguous, and I'm not sure how that would work. He also hinted at some sort of like private special fund, I guess similar to what he's doing with SpaceX, where you can kind of contribute to a fund and be a part of the whole thing as it's private. So I guess regardless, what I'm saying is it's all very non-traditional, we should say, and we still have a ton of questions. One thing we can confirm from Wednesday is that Musk was not simply making this all up on the spot, just coming up with the idea, which happens to people. You get rolling on a Twitter storm and you just, your brain's going and you're just hitting tweet and you're just coming up with things on the fly. That's apparently not what was happening. Tesla board confirmed on Wednesday that Musk had pitched the idea to them last week. So he's been sitting on these tweets now for like a week. So clearly they've been well thought out. That being said, he is right about Tesla having a lot of people that have an incentive to attack the company, people that have an incentive to see the stock price go down, perhaps shielding itself by going private would be a good idea. I think you could make a counter argument and say a lot of what Tesla is going for it is the fact that so many of the fans that can't participate in Tesla by buying a car because it's unaffordable to them can buy the stock and be a part of it. So that's also like a pro. So a lot of pros and cons. Obviously, it's not even close to a done deal, like probably the furthest that it could be from a done deal, obviously. And it might never end up coming to fruition. But one of the wildest stories I've seen develop on Twitter in quite some time, and certainly one we'll have to keep our eyes on as it develops.
Well, here at the office, we kind of watched it unfold.
Yeah, someone literally, Dave Bartosiak was in the office this week, and he said, did you guys just see what he just said out loud? Did you guys just see what Elon Musk tweeted? And we all
turned to our computer, Googled it, and we were like, oh.
Oh my God.
Yeah, that was pretty crazy. But I don't know if you watch the show Succession on HBO.
I don't, but I was planning on it now that the season is over.
It is over.
So I can binge.
It's a really great show. It's definitely a show you can binge. The episodes are long.
Yeah.
So get ready for that. So you're going to be there for like each episode is like
Love
an
it.
Hour.
I got nothing to do.
So that show deals with like this huge like powerhouse media conglomerate and the family that runs it. But it also deals with like the politics and the venom and the hate that and the greed that drives like each family member, but also like the decisions that one makes and doesn't tell the other family members. So one family member makes a decision and then the other family members find out through like third parties and like other things. And it just reminds me of like scenes where other family members have like find out about certain situations and like their faces and they're like the WTF moments that like they're like, excuse me. And it just, I can only imagine like people on either like the shareholders, so people at like T. Rowe Price, Fidelity, Baillie Gifford, just being like,
hello.
Like almost like the assistants coming into like the head guys or head women's office being like, did you see what Elon Musk just tweeted?
Yeah.
And like them having to like look at their phone, look at Google,
make
and just
a
being
phone
like,
call.
Make a phone call, like frantically being like, what is going on?
Yeah.
It's just, that
well,
is like
I'll tell
insane
you,
to me.
On the flip side of it too, every hedge fund in America that has a short position on Tesla picked up the phone and called the local branch of the SEC and said, hey, this is definitely not allowed.
Yeah.
We're going to sue this guy for everything he's worth. So I've heard mixed reactions on whether it is allowed. Technically, it's a public platform, Twitter, right? And we've seen mixed legal precedent on sharing information on Twitter as a public platform because everybody can see it. You're technically, if you're blocked by Musk on Twitter, which he definitely has people blocked, you can't see it. So you could say, well, I'm a shareholder in Tesla and I'm blocked on Twitter, so I can't see that as a public communication. So, you know, other people have this like 15-20 minute advantage before I can see the reports come out or whatever. Seems like a legitimate argument.
Right. Absolutely.
And you know, it is something that clearly had an effect on share prices. So there is a lot of legal hoops you have to walk through every time you're going to make some sort of announcement like that. There's a bit of precedent on sharing social media stuff specifically from CEOs. Apparently a couple years ago, 3 or 4 years ago, Reed Hastings had shared not public subscriber information about Netflix on his Facebook page and got a warning from the SEC saying, don't do that. So
it's now officially called like the Reed Hastings rule?
Yeah,
or officially, unofficially?
Unofficially, yeah, I guess so.
Okay.
So this could be a Reed Hastings rule violation, which
okay.
I don't maybe just get a strongly worded letter saying don't do this again, a fine. I think like he's the type of guy who, what does he care about a fine? So,
well, he did swagger into the Met Gala.
Yeah,
so
we'll see how this all plays out, but certainly a fascinating, fascinating story and a really interesting example of how social media works these days, definitely.
Absolutely.
As well. All right. So that does it for us this week. As a reminder, if you felt that we missed something or if you want to cover a different story or if you completely disagree with us about Elon Musk and want to get in an argument, shoot us an email at podcast@zacks.com. You can also check out all of our other exclusive audio content at zacks.com/podcast. We are also now on Spotify. Search Zacks Investment Research there, and you'll be able to find all of our shows. Remember to subscribe and leave us a rating on Apple Podcasts. Thanks again for joining us. We will see you next time on the Zacks Friday Finish Line.